Welcome back in everyone to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We have a fabulous show to share with you today. The title alone is absolutely brilliant. And joining us to talk about this production, we have the writer, composer, and director, Nia Witherspoon, and the choreographer and performer, Shannon Judson. They're here to talk to us about Here's presentation of Priestess of Twerk. It's playing now through June 8th at the Space at Irondale, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting here.org. The show is amazing. I cannot wait to have our guests share more about it, because I would just do a horrible job of surmising it. So let's go ahead and welcome on our guest, Nia Shannon. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, Nia Shannon, thank you for joining me today. I'm excited to dive into this work. So Nia, why don't I start with you? You are the writer, composer, and director of this piece. Can you tell us a little bit about what Priestess of Twerk is about?
I can tell you what it comes from before I can tell you what it's about. It comes from a lineage of Black femme wisdom in the form of literature, in the form of care, in the form of theater and dance, in the form of healing arts, in the form of church, in the form of African traditional religions. And it comes from that lineage as a way to, from the bottom of the sea, it comes from all of these places, and it travels into this moment where we are creating what I'm calling an intergalactic, interoceanic traveling twerk temple. And so in some ways it's a portal, and it's a collective of so many of these forms of knowing, from Isis, whose original name is Aset, her journey to the underworld. For those who don't know, Isis is an Egyptian or Kemetic mother goddess figure who is essentially one of the mothers of the world, and all the way travels all the way to, you know, the American South in, you know, the 70s and 80s with Toni Cade Bambara novel, The Salt Eaters, whose archetypes also are characters in the work. And there's a lot of collapsing of time and space inside of that exploration and discovery, really asking the question of, like, what is our relationship to our antecedents? How is it that we are constant rememberers of them? How is it that we are contemporary embodiments of these ancient figures? And how is that shaping our future? It's also just a space where all the aspects of us, some of which are available in pop culture, like twerk, you know, the tagline twerk, like anytime anyone hears twerk, like, they're like, ooh, what's that, you know? But maybe when they hear Isis, maybe not so much. And so really placing and juxtaposing some of these, some understood as sacred, some understood as profane, aspects of Black femhood across time, the time-space continuum, together as a statement around the mutual constitution of both of those realms, and that truly the binarization between those is something that really happened for us inside of Western colonialism. It's not something that is endemic to our cultures or ways of being. So I don't know that I've answered what it's about, but I've answered a lot of kind of like where it lives.
Yeah, I love that though. I want to snowball off of that. And I want to know, you know, what inspired you to pen this piece, to put it together?
So everything that I was just sharing, that's the inspiration, really. My own lived experience as a Black femme in the world, where I feel like there's definitely, you know, a before all of this understanding and after in my own life. And so for me, you know, I didn't encounter like Black feminist literature, for example, until I was really in college, essentially, really late high school, early college. And when I did, it sent me on a completely different trajectory in my life. I felt seen, known, heard. I was like, how do they know? Like, it was just like, It was everything that I had been looking for and needing that I didn't even know how to articulate. And really down quite a gorgeous and wayward path. I actually dropped out of school. I became an artist, essentially. I initiated myself. Of course, I went back and all that other stuff, but that's not even the important part of the story. The important part that this encounter created a rupture, a necessary rupture with all that I had felt to be true, but never had evidence outside of my own embodied experience to be true in the way that I found it there. And then with this piece, I was like, wait a minute, why did I have to wait until college, going to this PWI, this, you know, Seven Sisters college to like find Black femme literature? Like something's wrong with that picture. You know, I should have been known all of this and had access. And so, you know, it sent me, I think one of the exciting things about Priestess is that about taking this text and taking the kind of work that oftentimes is, I believe, I feel, my spirit feels choking in the ivory tower, you know, out into the world. Of course, the kids are growing up into a little bit of a different world now. And I think that, you know, that's not necessarily true of other Black girls today, but it's true enough. It's true enough that it feels like so much more that this is asking for that the world hasn't met it yet with. And so this is just like one, you know, way of meeting some of this incredible, rapturous creation, more creation and more attention and more depth and analysis present. Because it really is sacred text. Black feminist text is sacred text. And so, you know, and it doesn't really get treated in that way. So by lifting it up, we lift ourselves up, we lift each other up. The other thing that I'll say, and then I'll stop, because as you can tell, I like talking about this, but the other thing that I'll say is just that, like, I am on a journey of initiation in an African traditional religion called Ubungoma, and inside, and a lot of the actual text, the actuals of the text were, and the songs were written inside of that container, inside of that very, very intensive process and journey. And so, and in that, one of the main teachings is really understanding ourselves as others, is really understanding that I am you and you're me and we are us, and that the failure of that understanding has created the world that we see today, as opposed to another kind of world that we could have inherited, and my prayer is can still inherit. And so that energy and that intention and wisdom of what it takes to break, to rupture, and then to reorganize one's soul is also in a more formal initiatory path, is also very much undergirding the that is actually the arc. That is the storyline of the work.
That is fantastic. I love really learning about all of that. That's amazing. Now, Shannon, as a choreographer and as one of the performers, how is it that you came upon this piece?
So as a choreographer, well, as a human and as an artist, at this stage, I come upon the work that aligns with my purpose, passions, and abilities. So I feel like I came along the work and the work came along me. There was a meeting. And what I'm grateful for is the ways in which the work is providing space for me to both exercise what I know and what I intuit, but to also grow and to bloom. And that's been and continues to be a gratifying process to be inside of. I love that Nia gave the lineage of all of the traditions that this work draws on, because they're all traditions that ask for active embodiment of the makers, active embodiment of the players, and active embodiment of the audience members. And so it's with that knowing that I come into the space as a choreographer, knowing that the work is working, if it's working on me, particularly as a player inside of it too, that there's an ask of the work to let it in so that I'm in service to the work in that way. There's an ask to shape the work and to contribute to this space, particularly through the movement, where there is invitation and opportunity for audience participants to also be inside of embodied experience, because that's the need, opportunity, slash demand of those traditions, that you're not passive as an audience member, that you let the work in. Earlier on, you asked what the work is about. And, you know, I thought so much about church, right? And the pastor comes up and like, they have a passage, they, you know, they give a sermon, but when you look at people's notes, everybody wrote down something different. You know, they had those moments and they're like, if you can't say ouch, say amen, you know, and it's different for every person. And this work is very much inside of that tradition, that what moves you will be different from one person than the other. And I think that one of the things that's been exciting as a choreographer inside of this is to shape things that really complement and are in service to the beauty of the musical compositions and the beauty and the heft of the language, but to also choreograph things that just lay on how the thing feels. So there's this way for the audience to plug into, like, oh, I heard that, I saw that, and I felt that. And then I had this visual representation that supported the spark that was stirred by that language or by that music. And so I'm kind of according between those modalities, not in an either or way, but looking more like a DJ, like when is it more in service to the work to make the thing more plain, to underline and highlight what was said or sung? And when is it more in service to the work to give physical and visual poetry to the happenings that are inside of the space?
It's fascinating.
That was so beautiful, Shanon. Also, like, it reminds me so much how you know, when I think I just want to do a little troubling of the term of choreographer, just to like to speak to that point, which is that like Shanon is also creating movement for text. It's a ritual opera, so it is primarily music inside of the piece. But even for the text, the way that Shanon is working and the way that we are working collaboratively to unfurl the movement language of the piece for the text at large, it really creates such a unity in the journey. It's not like, okay, you know, what's the 5, 6, 7, 8 for that part? You know, it really is very much like a holistic picture of like the storytelling, the arc, and the way that the bodies activate both our own bodies as performers in the work. And then also, as Shanon was speaking to, how are we activating the bodies of the folks who are with us? And there is, I should say, there is opportunity for dancing and singing along with us as well at a particular part in the piece, like once we get through some of the more grueling aspects of the initiation.
I love that. That is all truly fascinating. It just builds on the experience that I think audiences are excited to take in. And I want to build on that thought, and I'd love to know, you know, what has it been like developing this piece? Of course, the show is open and it's running, but Shanon, I want to direct that question to you, because as both you and Nia mentioned, there is some opportunity for audience participation and whatnot. So once you've got the basic show, if you will, set, what has it been like developing onward from that and incorporating those interactions?
I love that Nia introduced the troubling tossing out the window the term choreographer. I often don't use it. I use it when I'm, you know, I use it on platforms, but I, you know, I consider myself a maker and a collager and a collaborator. And so one of the things that I love about that approach to making is that I get to work so intimately with the impulses and the intuitions of the folks who are inside of the room. I am a watcher, and I tell folks, both with honesty and also caution, if you do it in front of me, it's fair game. You know, like anything that I see happening in the room may be a possible solution. And what I find is that making in that way allows the work to rest on the bodies with a great deal of truth, because I'm drawing so much from what happens in the room and then using the processes of collaging and making to stretch and shift and to mix them into a tapestry. But there's so much of the work that is sourced from the knowing of who's inside of the space already. You know, no one comes to the room as a blank space slate. Everyone comes with histories and experiences in their own responses to the art that we're holding. And so I find that the more that I can draw on that, the richer the tapestry is that we're co-creating. And I love working with people, with community. I think that, again, all of these traditions that the work is in conversation with, they're all communal practices. And so what that means is that we don't have to think about how do we add church or ritual structures onto the work after the work is created, because the work is created with those structures, with those processes as part of its making. Them being communal are already inside of the fabric of the work. I came into the journey of making Priestess of Twerk within this last year, and my entry was inside of some of the workshops that Nia and some of the players were already inside of. In terms of the one that I got to attend that wasn't on video was
at Mercury Store. Yeah.
So that, you know, I feel like that was my first embodied experience with Priestess of Twerk, and it was communal. It was all the things as the work was in its development. So it's, these processes have been happening along the way. So the audience coming in as participants, coming in as initiates, is not an addendum. It was part of the construction process.
Yeah, it was, and that it was actually the other way around. Like the play text was the last thing to come, and all the rituals were the or the base, you know. Yeah, one thing that I wanted to share with listeners as well about the work is that it really starts the moment that you begin the experience of buying your ticket. There's an elder that says that the ceremony is more than the period at the end of the sentence. And so truly the ceremony starts the moment you intend to go. And with that in mind, when you buy your ticket, you will be led to another site that where a divination happens for you. And inside of that divination, you receive information about what might be coming up for you in your life at this time and what this work might be offering to you specifically. It also determines the space in which you will be seated and the priestess who's going to be your main guide throughout the experience. And so please be patient. Please know that it's all very intentional. And, you know, it only takes 5 minutes. So just, you know, get a glass of water or some tea and a blanket, and maybe try to think of it as some self-care, a meditation for yourself.
I love that. I love that process too. That's fantastic. Nia, coming back to you as the writer, composer, director, and I also want to mention that you are one of the Toe Foundation playwrights in residence at here. What is the message or thought you hope that audiences take away from Priestess of Twerk?
There's something that, it's so funny because all of my quotables that I even have right now are just in the play already, so are in the text. So I'm just going to keep using it for what it's for. But when we welcome folks into the place, one of the things that we say is, because by the way, there's a whole welcome and orientation about how to even be in the space, because it's a retraining. I was troubling choreographer. I'm going to now trouble theater. You know, it's a retraining about how to be in space together. So, and theater is one of the ways, one of the wonderful ways that our contemporary society still remembers how to be in space together. And there's also things that we've forgotten about how to be in space together. And so one of the things I'd love for folks to remember is how to be in space together, how to experience something that takes us to the depths of sorrow and joy together in a way that our bodies can relax, not simply our bodies can. So there aren't really chairs, of course, if for accessibility, if someone needs one, but there aren't really chairs. People are sitting on couches and pillows to experience the work. That's just one way that the work starts way before you enter into the theater doors. It also starts with the divination online to even determine where you're going to be sitting. So just aspects like this are already troubling, kind of like, or really opening up, really remembering how other ways of being in space together that theater is calling us back to. So I want folks to remember that ritual. I want folks to remember ritual. I also, the quote I was going to say is in the welcome language, we say in the quantum field, you are already healed. And that feels like such a really, really important thing to take from the work, to give to yourself and to receive from the work, which is the reminder that despite any ailment that any of us may be experiencing physically, emotionally, spiritually, as individuals, as communities, and also as a world, that there is a field that has an original blueprint, a DNA blueprint that is timeless, that is accessible at any time, that we simply have to tap into. And I experience our society as a profoundly disempowering one, not only in all of the ways that we always know about and hear about, but also in the sense that in the fiction that we are taught that we don't remember how to heal, that we are not always already healed in some way, shape, or form. And I think that that disability, I think that that is a collective disability. And it's one that I really, really want this work to be one of many acts of remembering. And also in the whole piece, it's very much an act of remembering from a character who has forgotten something very, very important, which I won't give away. But I think that like the fact that we have access to way more potential than we are taught to and or that we believe we do, it feels really important.
It's a beautiful thought. I love it. My final question for this first part, Shannon, I'm going to throw your way, and that is, who do you hope have access to this piece?
There are some great quotables inside of the work. One of the things that, because I'm a choreographer, but I'm also a player inside of the work, and one of the things that my character says, I'll say this as a spoiler alert, is that this, the information, the opening, the awareness, and the magic that this piece offers will save us all. And so in that notion, there is an opportunity for learning and expansion that any humans who are inside of this shared relationship of us being on this planet, there's something that people can take away that's going to be supportive, particularly because we're lifting up Black femme technologies and ways of being. And that's been information, that's been ways of knowing, that's been so structurally dismissed and understated that the ways in which it offers medicines and informations and remedies to right the wrongs, to right this all in the work, you know, the ways that it offers anecdote haven't been able to be as mass effective as they have the potential to be because of the ways in which systemic oppression lowers those voices and places that as less places that the knowings of intuition and of softening, of slowing down, places those as lesser value. So there's ways in which folks who come to this as humans who share the shared experience are going to draw, have the opportunity. You're going to draw what you're going to draw. You're going to draw what you allow. But there's an opportunity for any of us to draw from this because we have this, as Nia said, I am you, you are me. We have this shared experience and this potential for a collective wholeness. As a Black femme, I am also really excited for other Black femmes to experience this work. I love that inside of the marketing that there are some specific calls and days designated, because I think all the more, Nia was saying, like having to have waited so long in her life journey to hear this information, that's not a singular experience. You know, I went to these American schools as well, and I had that same, you know, I had that same experience, and want other things for the other Black femmes who my age, younger, older, to have these opportunities for collective learning, collective healing, collective amening, you know, and just like, okay, yes, I know this thing, and to hear it echoed and swollen around us, I think is a really powerful opportunity. And so hoping that many folks will take the opportunities that have been designated for us to be in collective space, which is a treasure that doesn't always happen. Black femmes to have collective space to be together. So I'm also looking forward to those opportunities, both as a co-creator inside of the work, as collaborator, but also there are ways where this work allows me to be in community. And so looking forward to that opportunity as well.
That is so wonderful. Wonderful. Nia, anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, Shannon, you has me always has me amening and hallelujahing over here in the corner. But yeah, I think in particular, just the what it means for this work to live is also the story of what it means for Black femmes to come to voice, to break free, to embrace fugitivity and flight, and to, I think, create a home, like create a space, a home within self and a home within a physical space. And, like I think we both have shared in different ways, Black femme-isms, twerk, nails, hair, aesthetics, movement styles, language and ways of speaking that like are things that our society have consumed wholesale on the discount rack. And the legacy is one of riches, of glory, of healing, way beyond that is it's misused, it's denigrated, it's fragmented, it's decontextualized. And so it feels really, really exciting to both for ourselves and for the community of witnesses who we share this world with to actually be able to be a part of that, weaving back together, placing the things that are deserving in places of honor and dignity and gratitude, and ourselves benefiting from them. Because because of the ubiquity of Black wisdom, I was like, no, I didn't encounter Black feminist literature until I was in college, but the ubiquity of Black wisdom was all around me my whole entire life. But I didn't understand it as such. And I think that that's a part of this larger, this mass denigration, despite my, militant father's best efforts. I didn't understand it as such. And so I think that really the work is so much about releasing our fear of the dark. That includes our fear of Blackness and Black people. That includes our fear of the womb. It includes our fear of our collective fears around the unknown of, the dark continent, of all of it. And so and the parts of nature that we don't understand, really all of it. And yet it's the place that literally we all come from in many, many ways. And I can leave that there. But I think that it is inside of this ritual remembering that feels just really exciting for me. It just feels I don't get to do this. And before this work and after this work, that's my mission statement on this planet. So this is one way of that. But I feel really excited because this is the piece that I think has most successfully thus far kind of broken through the strictures and boundaries that are set up for us to interact inside of a theatrical encounter. I think this is the one that most successfully, ruptures. And so I'm hopeful that folks will leave with a sense of whoa, I had no idea what I was about to experience. And I'm so glad that I did. I'm so glad that I stayed. I'm so glad that I took this chance and went to this 3 to 4 hour ritual opera with, that I still didn't know, that I didn't know what it was even going to be like. And I think that that level of bravery and courage and curiosity is a medicine in and of itself that can really get us through some trying times.
Second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I know we are a little bit short on time, but I can't let the two of you leave without asking my favorite question, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
The first thing that popped in my head was theater rehearsal in my home. My parents are both actors. My father now deceased, but they from Buffalo, New York originally, and they had an acting ensemble, People of Drama acting ensemble. And it's more of a flash than a full memory. I was probably about 3 years old during that rehearsal. And was supposed to be upstairs, but for some reason, like I just kept coming down. I wanted to be in the mix. I wanted to see what was happening. And it was a scene where my father was injured. I think it was a fight scene. And so like I'm running over to my father. He's such a compelling player. And you know, I love the flash of that memory and the reminder that theater, you know, they were doing immersive work before it was immersive work. They were making work where people were, and it was like, oh, we're going to be able to meet our audience if we, you know, if this thing travels from house to house, we'll be able to meet our audience if we do this thing at this club. You know, that's the happening place to do. Let's make a club interruption. I love the example that my parents provided that family making and homemaking and theater making can coexist in ways that are fruitful. And I very much, as a mother, drew on that model in ways that were intentional and not intentional, you know, but because I knew it to be true, I had that inside of my knowing of what was possible. So that's a memory that comes to mind. And then the other one I have to shout out to the home team is when I saw Urban Bushwoman perform. That was 90, 1994, 1995. And Urban Bushwoman is a dance theater company. And I was already a lover of musicals, but when I saw that work performed, it was the first time that I had seen theater and dance and music in conversation in a way that also was spirit stirring and truth telling and visceral. And so there was something else that was shaking in myself that was different from what I had experienced in the musicals that I also loved. And that sent me on a trajectory that very much connects to the body of work that I hold now.
I love that. Those are brilliant, brilliant memories. Thank you for sharing those. Nia, how about you?
I'll say there's a theater artist named Sharon Bridgeforth, who's also in Shannon's and my shared creative lineage. And I traveled to New Orleans. I was writing my dissertation, and she was one of the artists that was featured. And so I traveled to New Orleans to see some of her work in person. I had only ever even read it or heard her read it. Like, I never even knew what it might be like. I could only feel from the page what it might be like to experience in person. So I traveled from California to New Orleans to experience it. And it was fascinating because it was like just a stage, and it was just like maybe a 20-minute sharing. And there were no, there were no costumes to speak of. And there were just chairs in a half circle and probably text as well, like probably scripts. I think it was more of a workshop reading. And the way that the entire room changed when those words started being said, when that language was being layered, when the bodies were remembering and getting this one soul to remember all of these various reincarnations of her lifetime. It was a work called Delta Dandy. Yeah, I was and it was set in the bayou, so I was also in the space. The way that the spirits moved, it just, I saw stage effects. I saw smoke. I saw my body heated up and got freezing cold. I had such a fully transported experience at this stage reading, essentially. And it's just to this day one of the most potent reminders of what's possible with language and body and intention when really we can come together. We already have so much of what we need, which is one of the things that she often says, everything we need is already in the room, which came from Lori Carlos, her mentor. Yeah, that's one of them.
I love that memory though. That is such an incredible experience. So I love that memory. I love both of those memories. Thank you so much for sharing those. As we wrap things up, I would love to know if our listeners would like more information about Priestess of Twerk or about either of you. Perhaps they'd like to reach out to you. How can they do so?
Well, you can follow my page. I'm at Nia, NIASOLI, Soli. That's my great grandmother's name. Nia Soli at, oh yeah, at Nia Soli on Instagram. And then, yeah, I believe that all the links to the show are in my bio, also on the here.org link, as well as there's a Priestess of Twerk page. So at Priestess of Twerk as well on Instagram. Those are the, I think, fastest channels to get information on the work.
And for myself, when I am not at Priestess, the other space that I do a lot of my making and stirring is at Urban Bushelman. And we are at UBW Dance on Instagram. And you can also visit our website, urbanbushelman.com or .org.
Wonderful. Well, Nia, Shannon, thank you both so much for joining me today, for sharing this amazing piece and all your wonderful insight. This truly has been wonderful. I look forward to coming out and taking in this experience. So thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
My guests today have been the amazing writer, composer, and director, Nia Witherspoon, and the wonderful choreographer and performer, Shannon Judson. They joined us today to talk about here's presentation of Priestess of Twerk, which is playing now through June 8th at the Space at Irondale. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting here.org. We also have some other contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you head over to here.org, get on out to the Space at Irondale, and take in this incredible work, The Priestess of Twerk. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
And keep talking about theater.
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.